We thank you, Abba, for being a loving Father, for adopting us as your children. We give you glory and we lift up your Son, Yeshua. I just ask your blessing on everyone present here, that you would increase what you've placed in each one and assure each one of the value you've placed in them, the power that you've caused to dwell in them, and the truth of your love and provision. And I ask you for your help now, that you would glorify your name in me and in all of us, and in us as a group of disciples of Yeshua together, Lord. Do your will and increase the good thing that you have begun in Yeshua's name. I'm going to read part of Mark chapter 5 to you, starting at the first verse. They came to the other side of the sea, into the country of the Gerasenes. When he got out of the boat, immediately a man from the tombs with an unclean spirit met him. And he had his dwelling among the tombs, and no one was able to bind him anymore, even with a chain, because he had often been bound with shackles and chains, and the chains had been torn apart by him and the shackles broken in pieces, and no one was strong enough to subdue him. Constantly, night and day, he was screaming among the tombs and in the mountains and gashing himself with stones. Seeing Yeshua from a distance, he ran up and bowed down before him, and shouting with a loud voice, he said, What business do we have with each other, Yeshua, Son of the Most High God? I implore you by God, do not torment me. For he had been saying to him, Come out of the man, you unclean spirit. And he was asking him, What is your name? And he said to him, My name is Legion, for we are many. And he began to implore him earnestly not to send them out of the country. Now there was a large herd of swine feeding nearby on the mountain. The demons implored him, saying, Send us into the swine so that we may enter them. Yeshua gave them permission. And coming out, the unclean spirits entered the swine, and the herd rushed down the steep bank into the sea, about 2,000 of them, and they were drowned in the sea. Their herdsmen ran away and reported it in the city and in the country. And the people came to see what it was that had happened. They came to Yeshua and observed the man who had been demon-possessed, sitting down, clothed and in his right mind, the very man who had the legion, and they became frightened. Those who had seen it described to them how it had happened to the demon-possessed man and all about the swine, and they began to implore him to leave their region. As he was getting into the boat, the man who had been demon-possessed was imploring him that he might accompany him, and he did not let him, but he said to him, Go home to your people and report to them what great things the Lord has done for you and how he had mercy on you. And he went away and began to proclaim in Decapolis what great things Yeshua had done for him, and everyone was amazed. You ever met anybody like that? What? Yeah, I think I've met a few. They weren't necessarily in chains. It's interesting to me how strong. You think this man was that strong, or you think the demons were the ones that broke the chains and the shackles? What? Well, he might have been a pretty tough guy. They do what? Yeah. Yeah, there are mothers who have lifted up automobiles to untrap one of their little children.
That seems to be the power of God, because many of them, their bone structure supposedly wouldn't even support what they lifted.
Yeah, it is pretty interesting. Yeah, I always wonder, well, what kind of chains were they? How well were they forged? You know, let's see, it would have been iron, not steel. They didn't have steel yet. And then I think, but yeah, they could have been pretty strong. Even if they aren't like a 70,000 pound tensile strength logging chain like we might have now. So, anyway, the man and or the demons could break the chains and get loose, but he wasn't free when he broke the chains, right? And he lived among the tombs and was gashing himself with stones. You ever met anybody like that? I have met people that match that basic description too. And so these demons seem to have a lot of power, but they can't seem to go anywhere without permission from who? Their response to Yeshua coming along was basically begging not to get a certain outcome that they, for one reason or another, seem to dread. They didn't want to be sent out of the country. And they knew that they had no power against him. They knew that all they could do was make requests, and perhaps he would grant their request. That seemed to be accurate. So they don't want to be sent out of the country. I don't know, where do you suppose they went after they drowned the pigs? Apparently they stayed in the country, because they weren't thrown out of the country. It's interesting. So they're under God's authority, and they had no... You think they had any defense against Yeshua? None at all, it would seem. So he gave them permission to go into the pigs, and they went into the pigs, and they drowned the pigs, and, you know, it's like, oh, man, all that pork wasted. I wonder if they went and, like, pulled a bunch of them out and dressed them out and tried to make good, do the best they could with the loss. I don't know. I mean, in Pennsylvania, I mean, this would be a great tragedy. To lose 2,000 pigs, or anywhere where they raise pigs. So, Yeshua cast these demons. How many is that? So, is that what legion means? I don't always think about it. Is it about, is, what, how many, you think there was one demon for each pig?
Yeah.
That's a lot of demons. Apparently they don't take up any space. So he can't be restrained by chains, and he isn't free after he breaks out of the chains. But then he meets Yeshua, and Yeshua just begins to say, "Come out of the man, you unclean spirit." And he casts them out. And then, let's see, what's the description of him? He was like screaming and yelling, gashing himself with stones, ripping chains apart, and nobody could really do anything about him. And then they came to Yeshua and observed the man who had been demon-possessed sitting down, clothed. He wasn't clothed before, right? Clothed and in his right mind. Wow. The very man who had had the legion. And they became frightened. You know, would that frighten you if you saw a guy like this all of a sudden clothed in his right mind, not gashing himself, not screaming and yelling and ripping chains to pieces? I guess when, what? Yeah, when people encounter one sort of power, they have a certain response, and then when they encounter a power that has power over that power, I guess sometimes that's scary. They wonder, what is this? What kind of power is this? What's going on? And so anyway, then the people began to beg Yeshua to leave their region. I guess they didn't want all the rest of the demoniacs put into their right mind and clothed. Too much of a threat. Or maybe they thought all the pigs would be lost. Or maybe they thought that whatever their business was would have the demons given permission to go into their business and they'd lose it. I don't know. What do you think? What?
Maybe
they were control freaks. So anyway, then the man wants to go with him. And he just says, "Go home to your people and report to them what great things the Lord has done for you and how he had mercy on you." I mean, this guy didn't even, do a spiritual gifts analysis survey to find out what his gift was, the ones that accurately identify exactly what God has given to you so that you can be secure in knowing that I'm a prophet because I answered yes to 8 questions that prove I'm a prophet. Now I know what I'm here for and I feel bigger and better. That's what happens. I've seen that kind of thing happen with those surveys. But he didn't even have one of those surveys. And he didn't go to Bible school. And, did he have any training? He's just, just a few moments before he was this crazy demonized guy. And now he's wearing clothes and in his right mind. And he must know that his life has changed, but what is he really? He hasn't had any theological training. Maybe not. He didn't even have time to read all those self-help books that Christian bookstores are full of. So anyway, he didn't go with him, and then it says, and he went away and began to proclaim in Decapolis what great things Yeshua had done for him, and everyone was amazed. This has got to be the shortest ministry training course I've ever heard of. And then there's that woman at the well who Yeshua asked for water. And she wants to know why he's asking. And they have a little conversation. And at one point he says, if you knew who I was, you'd ask and I'd give you living water. And, you know, you'd never be thirsty again. And then he already knew, but she discovers that he knows what kind of life she's had. And that she'd had, I think it was 5 husbands, and the man she was with then, she wasn't even married to. And then she just goes back to her village and starts talking about what happened, and a bunch of people believed. And she doesn't seem to have gone to Bible school or anything either. It's pretty incredible. So, how much do you have to know to share the good news in Yeshua with somebody and see them come to faith? And by the way, if you share the good news of Yeshua with somebody and they don't come to faith, is that a comment on you and the gospel? Has everyone answered? If someone doesn't come to faith as a result of your prayers and your efforts and your trusting God to use you, have you failed? Has the gospel failed? Has anybody here ever felt like they failed because the response wasn't what you hoped for? Yeah, it's pretty easy to feel that way. And it's one of the ways that the enemy, I think, uses to get us to, if not just kind of stop trying, at least to lose confidence, so that as we're saying whatever we feel led to say, we're also doubting at the same time, and even maybe thinking things like, well, what good is this going to do? But the results are up to the Lord, and really, we just need to be obedient and believe Him. And then trust that He will do His will with whatever it was we offered in faith. And you know, some people, they come to faith remembering some little exchange they had with someone years before, and how that one little thing that happened just kept pestering something in their mind, bringing it back up and just working away on them, and that it all started at this moment when somebody whose name they may not even remember anymore just took a moment to say something to them about the Lord. So I figure that everybody here, no matter how much you think you don't know, probably knows more than the woman at the well or this demoniac that was suddenly put into his right mind about what the scriptures have to say about Yeshua. Don't you suppose? And the scriptures tell us that as Yeshua is, so are we in this world. So if when you go to speak with somebody, I don't know, do you try to reason with people when you talk to them? You ever try to reason with a demoniac? Yes, I can give the same testimony. I have actually tried to reason with people that were demonized, and it doesn't work. It's actually a big mistake. Unless it's the Holy Spirit reasoning through you, then that might be different. But you really can't trick a demon into losing control of the person they've got control of by using your head. But if the Spirit of God indwells you, and you know the scriptures say that we're indwelt by the Spirit, and that the life of Yeshua is in us, so that means the same power that he had when he encountered this really dramatic guy and the somewhat less dramatic woman who had all these men and had lived a not such a great life, means that's the same power that we have, right? And what do you think? When Yeshua was approaching the shore, or when he walked up to that well, do you think he was trying to come up with what he was going to say to whoever he met? Like, oh man, I better get ready and try and come up I better be prepared and have the right thing to say. Let's see, what is it today? What should I say? Do you think he was doing that? Yeah, well, the question was, do you think he was trying to come up with something? Okay, well, so what would you say then to somebody who is trying to come up with whatever it is they're going to say, come up with something really slick that'll really work? And by the way, haven't you all talked to somebody and maybe they seemed a little tricky and a little smart and you tried to outrun them or out-trick them or run faster on the treadmill of ideas and quippy sayings so that you could win? Haven't you? Has that ever happened to you? I mean, you were trained well, so it's probably never happened to you. But I'm sorry, it's the preacher's kid thing, you know. It's just this kindred thing with preacher's kids, right? Have you ever tried to do that? You know, I don't know if I've ever fallen into just trying to be smart enough when it didn't in some way blow up in my face. Even if it didn't look like it blew up, I mean, it's like, then it hits me and it's like, oh, I fell for it. And enemy got me to try to be smarter. And anyway, so going to look at a few verses. One of them's from 2 Corinthians. It says, "And God is able to make all grace abound to you, so that in all things, at all times, having all that you need, you will abound in every good work." You think that applies to more than just money to give to people who are doing stuff that need to be supported? You think? From Ephesians 4, it says, "Instead, speaking the truth in love, we will in all things grow up into Messiah himself, who is the head. From him the whole body is fitted and held together by every supporting ligament, And as each individual part does its work, the body grows and builds itself up in love. So I tell you this and testify to it in the Lord. You must no longer walk as the Gentiles do in the futility of their thinking. I was reading this yesterday, and I was thinking, oh, you know, the body is being built up, right, fitted together. And is the body complete before everybody that's going to become part of it comes to faith and becomes part of it? The first time I ever read the passage where what I saw was Yeshua is supplying to everybody who is part of the body what they need for the body to become what it is, but those needs are the needs we have for communicating to people that are not yet part of it, and that is part of what ends up bringing them in and causing them to fit into the temple that is being built with living stones. Are you following me? So he's able to cause us to grow up into Messiah himself, who is the head. From him, the whole body is fitted and held together by every supporting ligament. And as each individual part does its work, the body grows and builds itself up in love. So I tell you this and testify to it in the Lord. You must no longer walk as the Gentiles do in the futility of their thinking. So when people aren't walking in the futility of their thinking anymore because they've come to faith, they have all these things applied to them so that they can speak to other people who are still stuck in the futility of their own thinking, and they encounter Yeshua and they come to faith. And then I just see like the ligaments and all the pieces of the body and whatever part you are and what I am, it's all just sort of taking a hold of them and them becoming part of it. And then they start supplying part of what the body needs to be fitted together as Yeshua fits it all together. I'll see where this goes. You remember when they were building the tent of meeting, the people brought contributions, and finally they came and told Moses, tell the people to stop, there's enough, there's more than we need, it's like there's too much, and they were restrained from giving. I was looking at 1 Chronicles 29, and it reminded me of that, and this is David. It says, David praised the Lord in the presence of the whole assembly, saying, praise to you, Lord, the God of our father Israel, from everlasting to everlasting. Yours, Lord, is the greatness and the power and the glory and the majesty and the splendor, for everything in heaven and earth is yours. Yours, Lord, is the kingdom. You are exalted as head over all. Wealth and honor come from you. You are the ruler of all things. In your hands are strength and power to exalt and to give strength to all. Now, our God, we give you thanks and praise your glorious name. But who am I and who are my people that we should be able to give as generously as this? Everything comes from you, and we have given you only what comes from your hand. We are foreigners and strangers in your sight, as were all our ancestors. Our days on earth are like a shadow, without hope. Lord our God, all this abundance that we have provided for building you a temple for your holy name comes from your hand, and all of it belongs to you. I know, my God, that you test the heart and are pleased with integrity. All these things I have given willingly and with honest intent. And now I have seen with joy how willingly your people who are here have given to you. Lord, the God of our fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, keep these desires and thoughts in the hearts of your people forever, and keep their hearts loyal to you. Oh, as we're involved in building up the body, and I'm just struck by the struggle people often have of feeling that they don't have what's necessary for the thing that's at hand. Often, particularly, well, maybe in any situation, but when it comes to sharing the good news, people often feel lack. And if everything, all the riches of our Father's house belong to us, right? It can only seem like they don't belong to us if we'd kind of like to have a kid to roast and throw a party for our friends, but don't think our Father would give us one. Or if we thought, oh, there's riches in my Father's house, I'm going to take a bag full of it and I'm just going to go out and have fun away from my Father's house. That doesn't really work out very well either way, right? But if you know who your Father is, and you know that you live in his house, and you know that all the riches of the Father's house are yours, and you understand that whatever you offer to God, you offer it because he's given it to you, and he generously supplies every need and is always able to cause an abundance for every good work that there is to do, then it's really a battle in the mind, isn't it, as to whether or not we can go to speak the love of God to somebody and have nothing to offer. He's placed it in us. He's given us new life. And just like this demoniac, we can tell people what he did. And God doesn't ask us to build the temple or to do the works that he prepared for us to do from before the foundation of the world without giving us the tools and the materials and everything that's needed, right? He gives it all to us. And then how hard is it to offer back to somebody what they gave to you? What? Apparently it's pretty hard sometimes. But I think one thing that makes it really hard is that it's a thought that sort of says you don't actually have what's been given to you. Yes. Yeah. Yeah, that's what I'm talking about. Your own thinking can cause you to think you don't have anything to offer. That could defeat you. Or your own thinking can cause you to think that your own thinking has to come up with something really slick that will do God's work for him, which keeps us from letting the Holy Spirit work through us. So in one case, it's a false sense of lack, and in the other case, it's a false sense that somehow, well, that's lack too in one different way, I guess, but that we somehow have to be smart enough to convince somebody. And then there's always that thing, like, you know, most of us, I mean, I don't mind looking good. You know, it feels better than feeling like you look like an idiot, right? I mean, if you're talking to people and they seem to think that you're intelligent and smart, that feels better than when it feels like they think you're a stupid idiot, right? And that's another battle, because the scriptures guarantee us that what we have to offer is foolishness to those that are perishing. The stench of death. And you ever smelled like raw chicken that got left out in a bag for a few days in the sun because somebody forgot to bring it in from, you know, I mean, it's a stench of death. That's what the scriptures say we smell like to people that are rejecting God. I don't know if you can go your way rejoicing for being counted worthy to suffer for the sake of the Lord by getting like beaten up. I think you could also go your way rejoicing thinking, hey, I smell like rotten chicken or a can of worms that was, you know, left in the back of the pickup truck after a fishing trip. I smell like that to these people. Hallelujah. That's what the scriptures say I smell like to them. If I smell like it says I should smell, then I thank God for it. But to those that are being saved, it is the fragrance of paradise regained, of eternal life, salvation. You know, what the truth smells like to people is determined by their attitude and their own inclinations, what they're drawn to or repulsed by. And that part is not up to us in any sense at all. And it is actually possible to speak to people and be insulted and really not feel bad about it and really not feel like, oh yeah, I am what they said I am. It's actually possible to be just fine when stuff like that happens. And I think a lot of times the biggest thing is really just to allow the Lord to give us the wisdom to know when to stop, when to not try, when it is actually just our efforts, or we are about to take pearls and throw them in front of stampeding pigs. It's easy to miss it sometimes if we feel like we have to succeed. But you know, if you offer something in faith, and you really just offer it in faith, you don't have to know how it's going to turn out at all. But if you offer it in faith, it really can't be a failure. And once again, you don't know the results. There are people that seem totally dead set against God and act that way, that either God softens them, maybe they weren't as hard as they seemed to us. Doesn't really matter. Paul seemed pretty hard. That demoniac seemed pretty hard. It's just God's the one with the authority. And so if we act in faith and just let him have the authority and don't feel like we need to try to direct it and manipulate it or control it in any way, and we can just be who we are and leave it up to God how he's working and what he's going to do with what we offer. And actually feel, I think, joy and satisfaction in just being obedient and leaving all the results up to the Lord. So there was a beggar that wanted something from Peter. Money, I guess. He says, I don't have any gold or silver, but I got something, and I'll give that to you. And seems pretty simple, but you know, then he just says this, like, bizarre thing in the name of Yeshua. Just get up and walk. Just be well. I don't have any money for you, but hey, I just offer you what I have. And that was the authority of the Lord, not Peter. So just, you know, I didn't have time to finish this, but is going out and doing, you know, outreach, is it frightening?
Yes.
I like honest answers. You know, sometimes I don't feel very nervous, and other times I feel just like, oh man, I just want to go home. Oh man, I feel like this is going to shrivel me down to like a little prune. Sometimes I feel like that. And, you know, it doesn't really matter if you have struggle with how you feel. Sometimes the change in the feeling really only comes from not just letting the feeling determine what you're going to do. Sometimes it comes later, but preparing yourself is a good idea. We really should pray before we do these things. But anyway, I'll just give you a little taste of it. I don't have time to write it all, but there's this little song. Here's a little song I wrote. You might want to sing it note for note. Don't worry, be praying. In every life we have some trouble, but when you worry, you make it double. Don't worry, be praying. Don't worry, be casting your burdens on Yeshua. He cares for you, so don't worry. Ooh, 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 ooh. Be happy. Don't worry, be trusting. Don't worry, be praying. Ooh, 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 ooh. Somebody came and took your bed. Don't worry, be rejoicing to be counted worthy to suffer for his sake. The landlords say your rent is late. He may have to litigate. Don't worry, be trusting. He will supply your every need. Oh, 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 oh. It wasn't ooh, I'm sorry. I don't know why I did that. Don't worry, be happy. Here, I give you my phone number. When you worry, call me. I make you happy. Don't worry, be happy. That's Yeshua. I give you my number, you know, just call on me. And ain't got no cash, ain't got no style, ain't got no gal to make you smile. Don't worry, be trusting. Because when you worry, your face will frown. And that will bring everybody down. So don't worry, be trusting. Don't worry, be happy now. Like good little children, don't worry, be trusting. Now listen to what I said. In your life, expect some trouble. When you worry, you make it double. So don't worry. Be trusting. Be casting all your cares on him. He cares for you. That's the key. You should all believe you have the authority and power of Yeshua in you. And so it's the one that lives in you that's in charge when you reach out to people, not the devil, not those people, not the government, anything else. It's just the Lord. So Lord, I ask you to just encourage us all, speak to us in our hearts about the truth of what you've done in us and the truth of what you've done in us does when we share about it in faith, expecting you to do the things you say you do through those that you have bought and made your children. And strengthen us. And we ask you, Lord, to bring more people into your kingdom, to touch them with your love and use us to do it, Lord. Hallelujah. The Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. The Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace.